Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings. Welcome to another segment of New Day Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and we thank you, as usual, for tuning in to us for our Saturday night program that we, of course, bring to you each week, same time, same place, and always a lot of stimulating, motivating conversation. And we hope for you some kinds of focuses on direct action, because that's what we really need to be looking at in this day and age, not just conversation, but certainly things that are going to bring about actual solutions, and that's what our program is certainly about. Before we begin tonight's program, as usual, we always give thanks and praises to our Creator, and certainly we are always very appreciative of our freedom-fighting ancestors. Well, we are, of course, in the month of July, and with that said, we're going to get ready to go to our live line and talk to Sister Coker and see who she has in store for us this week to give us insight into, some of the history, her story, our story persons who we know have made contributions in some way or another to our liberation, to our edification, and so forth and so on. Before we do that, we want to kind of give you a little insight into some of the dialogue for tonight. We're going to talk about, well, a couple of things. One, we're going to pay tribute to two dynamic women who also happen to be born during this month, and we're talking about Sister Ashada Shakur, as well as our mother, Ida B. Wells, who is also one of the MWM Sister Saints, and we'll tell you more about that a little later on. We now have 12 Sister Saints, and this year we're going to pay tribute to all 12, and that's going to take place during the May Women March week that's going to happen in October. So we're going to be giving you a lot more information about that in upcoming programs. But again, for tonight, we want to remind folk that our Sister Ashada Shakur, of course, still needs our support, still needs our prayers, etc., because this government is certainly still trying to capture her, for lack of better terminology. So we still say hands off Ashada as we salute our Queen Warrior Sister Ashada Shakur. And certainly we are going to provide you with some information about Mother Ida B. Wells. If you are not familiar with who that is, it's time that you are, and we're going to, again, give you some insight into who Ida B. Wells is, because her spirit certainly continues on today. And let's see, we're going to also talk a little bit about education and miseducation as we prepare for next week's program, which is going to also provide a report on a conference that is taking place in Atlanta, or has taken place in Atlanta this past weekend, that focused on homeschooling, African Black homeschooling, because we want to begin to really start talking more about that, especially as we get towards September. Folks are going to be looking for alternatives, and unfortunately some are being forced to do so because there's so many schools that are closing nationwide, and you know, some feel it's a good thing because in certain ways they certainly weren't getting what was needed for real education. And so it's about time that we begin to focus more on the education of our children, of our people, because we want to look at preschool through college, through the higher education. Where are our schools? When are we going to seriously look at developing independent schools? Well, right about now. We're talking about having to do that now. Whether people like it or not, we're being forced to do that. And again, for some, we feel that it's a good thing that we are now putting more emphasis on our own school. And we have to be a bit more creative as to how we're going to fund that, because, of course, those efforts have occurred in the past and in some instances were, in fact, successful. As you all know, after so-called emancipation or whatever, a lot of our people open their own schools, you know, freedom schools, for lack of a better terminology for some. But the bottom line is, at that point in time as well, we had to have our own. Well, we have to have our own now, needless to say, and we really are about making certain that we do. So with that said, we are going to now begin to talk more about how to do that and, again, focus on from preschool through called higher education, which, of course, is college level and beyond. So we're going to talk more about that. Now, with that said, we're going to have a young brother coming on very shortly on our live line who is going to tell us about a situation at a school that he is a student at, one of the so-called historically black colleges. And it seems that for whatever reason, there are instructors at some of these colleges, not just the so-called historically black colleges and universities, but throughout the country, some of our professors or teachers, as you may, who are focused. And when I say focused, they have the capability of educating and providing information from a frame of reference that's a little more conducive. Well, some of them are starting to catch a little problem. And so, of course, you heard us talk about Brother Tony Monterio not too long ago. Well, we're going to talk a little bit more about that, too. And we're going to, again, talk to a young brother when we begin to look closer at what's going on at some of our colleges. Well, brother's going to be coming on shortly, and he's going to talk to us about what's going on at the Bethune-Cookman College with the professor there who seems like he won't be returning. And it seems that, again, this is one of the more progressive folks. So we're going to talk with him very shortly and get some insight into what's going on with that. And we're going to also get you ready for the Queen Mother More Weekend, which is coming up for next weekend here in Philly. But you all are going to be able to share in on some of that because we're going to do a very special broadcast next week for our program here at New Day. We're going to talk about Queen Mother More and talk with some people who either knew Queen Mother More personally and or those who have done research or study in regards to her, and or those who are continuing to do some of the work, meaning reparations. And I think the Queen Mother was certainly not only known for, but was so adamant and so committed to. So we're going to talk more about that shortly. Again, before we do, we're going to talk with Sister Coker. We're going to take a quick break. When we come right back, we're going to hear about who Sister Coker wants to tell us about for this week. We're going to take a quick break. Be right back. All right, and we're back. And okay, let's see now. We are going to move things right along. And with that said, we're going to go to our live line, and we're going to open that up and bring in Sister Coker, who is going to give us our information for this week and tell us about some of the people who were either born in this month or may transition in this month. But the bottom line is we have, thousands of folk who have made serious contributions to our growth and development. And we want to make sure that, you know, that you all also are kept aware of who some of these people are. And I'm sure there's some that you know or have heard about as we've been doing this now for the past few months. And then there's some people you aren't familiar with. So Let's do this. Let's go to our live line and bring Sister Coker in for our July 19th segment. Sister Coker, do we have you here?
Yes.
And praising our Creator for Black Talk with our Empress. And there were easily 50 people of note born in July. And
wow.
I've been trying to go date by date, but I managed to do 6. And then just jumped over about 20 people to do Nelson Mandela. And I know all the other folks are coming up, but I'm going to do the best I can. So anyway, the first one is Margaret Walker, born the 7th, 1915, in Birmingham, Alabama, and left us September 1598 in Jackson, Mississippi. She was a poet, novelist, teacher of creative writing at Jackson State College in Mississippi. And she published a biography of the novelist Richard Wright, a volume of poetry and collection of essays. The second person is Clarence Eckstein, Billy Eckstein, the singer, born the 8th in 1914 in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and he died March 8th, 1993 in Pittsburgh also. The classy jazz baritones band launched the careers of Dizzy Gillespie, Miles Davis, De Gordon, and Sarah Vaughan. A piano bought for his 2 sisters was used to whet his musical appetite. And although he was a star athlete in high school, he joined the choir, and this excelled his musical talent. After graduating Howard University, he toured the Midwest singing with various groups and settled in Chicago in 1939 at 25 years of age. Upon joining Earl Father Hines' band, Eckstein wrote and sang his first hit, Jelly Jelly. From 1944 through 1947, Eckstein's band helped pioneer the bebop sound. 1941 began his solo singing career until 1992 when he suffered a stroke. The handsome, elegant Mr. B, as he was known, he also appeared in films and has been called the first symbol. Sassy and Mr. B are my 2 favorite singers. And Down to Earth, which he recorded with Motown, is, in my opinion, Billy's best. The third person, and also the 8th, also on the 8th, is Faye Waddleton. I'll just give a little bit of information on her. Born 1943 in St. Louis, Missouri. She was the former president of Planned Parenthood Federation of North America. She graduated high school at 16. In 1973, Roe versus Wade legitimized abortion. In 1977, she was very much involved in abortion rights because of all of the situations where young people were being harmed because they couldn't have an actual abortion. The fourth person is Orenthal James, O.J. Simpson, or Orenthal James. And he was born the 9th in 1947. Now, the main point of O.J. is his trial is that it gave the world in your face attention to the difference of opinion of how blacks and whites view the police, courts, and racism. And that's why I focused on that, specifically for that reason. But this person is Barbara Charlene Jordan, Barbara Jordan. And she was also born on the 9th in 1936 in Houston, Texas, until she lived until January 17, 1996, transitioned in Austin, Texas. She was a Texas state senator, a U.S. congresswoman, an educator, a great 20th century orator. She retired from Congress in 1979 and returned to Texas to teach public policy at the University of Texas. Lyndon B. Johnson School of Public Affairs. And the reason she retired was because of multiple sclerosis. She could no longer continue in the role she had. Of her numerous awards, she received the Eleanor Roosevelt Humanities Award in 1984 and 20 honorary awards from leading university, honorary doctorate awards from leading universities. The sixth person is Mary McLeod Bethune, born July 10th, 1875, near Maysville, South Carolina, and she transitioned May 18, 1955, in Daytona Beach, Florida. She was a civil rights leader, an educator, and during this time as an educator, she founded the Daytona Education Industrial Institute, which merged with Cookman Institute, becoming Bethune-Cookman College. Being the founder and president, in 1935, Bethune won NAACP's medal, the Spingarn Medal. And I'm certain many of us are familiar with that. This is the medal they give to people who have done very well in helping others when they have their annual NAACP awards. That year, she also established the National Council of Negro Women. And Bethune was influential in Franklin Delano Roosevelt's administration as a race leader at large. She helped organize the Federal Council on Negro Affairs, also known as the Black Cabinet. She helped secure state and local government positions for indigenous Africans born in the United States. In 1940, he was wrongfully labeled a communist, which damaged her reputation. She died from heart complications. And finally, after I skipped over about 20 people to get to this man, we'll focus on the man who would have celebrated 96 years yesterday, Nelson Rolihlahla Mandela, born in South Africa, in Mvezo, South Africa. We know he was the first black president of South Africa. And in 1990, after 27 years imprisoned in Robben's Island, the island that was known as a brutal place where political prisoners were kept. And upon leaving Robben's Island, Mandela said, and this is a paraphrase, "As I leave prison to embrace freedom, I know if I don't leave the anger, hatred, and bitterness behind, it will imprison me forever." And that's what I was able to do. That was a lot of research, but I'm still working on it. There's so many more people to get to. As you know, Queen Mother Moore was born this month, and so many other people. But that's the best I can do this week, and I thank you for the opportunity.
All right, and thank you, my sister. And so I'm going to give a couple of little sidebar to a few things that you mentioned. One, and I think it's really important, because while it was definitely an issue for those who were attempting to have abortions, I think it's important that people do remember that Margaret Sanger, unfortunately, was in fact, if not the founder of Planned Parenthood. She was certainly very instrumental in that happening. And it's really important to understand how Margaret Sanger was able to dupe people into thinking that Planned Parenthood was something good, when in fact Margaret Sanger was a eugenicist. And what that means is that she advocated for the extermination of black people, of African people. And so we have to be very aware that these people utilized certain issues of that day in order to get the support of the common, so-called common folk, and particularly of white women, because that's how she was able to push her ideology for the eugenic society, which was adamant in focusing on eliminating black people. When you do the research on Margaret Sanger, and we'll talk more about that in the future, because very recently I was walking down the street, and there were literally two off-white people walking up and down the street, you know, going to people, saying, wanting them to sign a petition, because apparently the government has reduced, or so they claim to have reduced, funding for Planned Parenthood. And they literally had people on the street who were trying to get people to sign a petition against this cut. And so, again, when the person came over to me and said, well, you know, this is what's happening, and will you sign the petition? And I asked them, I said, do you know about Margaret Sanger? And so one of them did, and the other one didn't. And I said, well, do you know that she was really an advocate of the extermination of black people? And she looked at me like, huh? And, you know, because these are young people, so they didn't have a clue. They were just doing a job, make a couple of dollars. So
right. The
bottom line is this whole thing with Planned Parenthood, as we've talked about on this program before, we have to be really very careful about that, because it's a front. And the reality is it was really designed, and, you know, to a great degree, to encourage our women to abort their children. Margaret Sanger was a devout eugenicist. And for those who don't know what eugenics is, it is the specific advocacy and practice of exterminating a people. And here in the U.S., you literally had, during the early 1900s, eugenic society all over the country. And one of the first clinics that Margaret Sanger opened was, of course, in Harlem. And she would use black women to actually staff the office. And so my point being is that these people use our people to bring in, you know, who they want to bring in order to exterminate us, in order to murder us. So we're going to talk more about that in the future as well. Lastly, and this is, again, another sidebar, in regards to Mary McLeod Bethune, we're going to be bringing on very shortly a student who is, in fact, a student at the Bethune-Cookman College, and he's going to talk to us about a issue that's going on at that school as we speak. The other thing we want to note to everyone is that next week we are, in fact, going to talk extensively about Queen Mother Moore, and she was, in fact, a member of the National Council of Negro Women at the request of Mary McLeod Bethune, and also We're going to talk about that connection and give you some insights to that. So, but that's it, Sister Coco. Thank you again. And we look forward to talking more with you next week.
And very quickly, thank you so much for that insight, because that Sanger woman's name wasn't mentioned at all in this article. And
well, no, it wouldn't
why,
be. It wouldn't be, because what you were reading was referencing Black history. Or African-American history. So Margaret Sanger wouldn't be in that. But you know, the fact of the matter is, see, again, this is why we have to really look carefully at certain things, especially when it comes to the institutions or so-called institutions in this country. Because what happens is a lot of the stuff that you know, is kind of noteworthy, as they say, or has some notoriety, is really there as a distraction or a way of lessening our capability to really make progress. So essentially, just like with the NAACP, when you do the history on the NAACP, what you find is that, number one, it wasn't started by Black people,
right,
by African people. So for real, you know, who was that really for? And that's not to say that there was not good work done at some point in time, but in this day and age, in looking at it over the years, we have to really kind of look and say, well, you know, there's some very serious things that have occurred that have really deterred, or if not deterred, really lessened our capabilities. So, and that is real obvious today, you know, with that particular group, with the strides that we are trying to make in moving forward. Certainly, this group or that particular group has kind of gotten in our way, to be honest. So, you know, we really, you know, again, it's good that we understand the historical significance, and I think that's very important. But we also have to make sure we keep it in context with, you know, how is that applicable for us today. And so, again, we definitely need that history, but we also got to make sure we understand how this stuff definitely operates today. And so it's a known fact that the Planned Parenthood group or the various Planned Parenthood entities that's all over the country do massive killings of Black babies. And it's not to say that in some cases that might not be, you know, that may not be an issue, but because of the trickery of the system and the taking advantage of situations, they internalize a way to kind of, if not coerce, at least convince women to do this, and that's all intentional. That's all intentional. So we'll be talking more about that in the future. But again, thank you, my sister.
One second, and praising the Creator that you bring out the information so beautifully, and that you know so much. It's amazing. You amaze me, I tell you. Thank you.
Well, you know, I'm an ongoing student. I had the opportunity to hear with a colleague of mine the other day an interview with Venus and Serena's father, and he talked about how being a lifelong student, you know, that no matter how what age you become, you can always, you know, continue, and even if it's in a physical school, but certainly, you know, you can always continue to learn and develop. So I certainly strive, and I know many of our brothers and sisters do as well. So I thank you, my sister.
Okay, and I'm just giving you your props, and if we have it, hey, why not? You know.
All right. Well, I'll take it. All right, family. We've been talking with Sister Coker, and in a few minutes we're going to bring in a young student, again, from the Bethune-Cookman College, who's going to tell us a little bit about what's going on over there. And next week, hopefully, we'll bring on the actual professor that he's going to tell us about. In a minute, we're going to talk with Brother Daniel Cherry, who's going to tell us about a situation at the Bethune-Cookman College. So we're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back. And thank you again, my sister.
Thank you.
All right, and we're back. And, of course, in our background, we are listening to none other than Selah, one of my favorite artists. Okay, let's do this. We're going to go to our live line. And, again, as we were talking earlier about the real need that we educate ourselves, and in this day and age, we have to examine what that really means today. Certainly, it's more than what we think or what we have thought. We used to think that if we sent our children to even a charter school that was so-called Afrocentric or African-focused, and certainly with the historically black colleges and universities, it was thought that if we did that, you know, that was really a step forward in doing the right thing in making certain that our children, our youth, our young adults could kind of move in the right direction from an educational standpoint. Well, nowadays, some of that is suspect, meaning it's certainly questionable to say the least. So what we're going to do is go to our live line, and we're going to hear about a situation that's going on at one of the colleges, historically black colleges. And in the near future, we're going to tell you a little more about some things that I'm sure you're probably not aware of. At any rate, let's go to our live line again, and we're going to bring in Brother Daniel Cherry, who is a student at the Bethune-Cookman College, and has brought to our attention that there is a situation there that he wants to share with us, and certainly request your support, our support. So let's do that. Let's go to our live line and bring in Brother Daniel. Do we have you here?
Yes, yes, Ms. Empress. How are you?
I'm very good in yourself. And if you got us on speakerphone, you want to not do that because you're going to pick up all the background sounds.
Okay, give me a second.
Can you hear me?
Very good. Okay.
Okay.
How are you this evening?
I'm good, and yourself? How are you?
We are just fine, as usual. So let us begin. Please tell us a little bit about you.
Yeah, I'm from Philadelphia originally, West O'Glean area. I graduated in 2013. I applied to Bethune-Cookman at HBCU, where I felt though that HBCU, knowing that it's a historical black college where I would go amongst people, young people amongst myself that's want to better themselves and actually be able to communicate and converse and actually want to build just with African-Americans and actually just want to get away from their neighborhood where it's a crabs of the barrel theory and it's just so enriched. And but I was just under that impression, but it's the very opposite. You know, a lot of HBCUs struggle with this, but I was just under the impression of just black people together that wants to do something with their lives. But we all come from different walks of life, and we all come from different families, just ways of teaching. And with that being said, you know, we're just different. But at the same time, we're the same. And a man by Dr. Raphael Jackson, my teacher for this semester that I just passed, I'm an incoming sophomore now, he taught black history. Before I met this man, I wanted to quit school because of I just felt like I was just lied to, just given to the side of HBCU, Historical Black College. And he was just letting me know that, you know, keep your head up. A lot of our people, they just don't understand that, you know, a lot of things in life as far as with this, with music, TV, a lot of things is just built here for us to stop us from prospering. And he was a kind of a teacher and man that that was trying to get you out of your mentality. Just give you that paradigm shift where though that, okay, you realize what's going on. You know, you're not giving, you're just not on a goal type of mentality, but let me sit here, recollect, and let me think what's going on, think before I do, and think before I speak. So that's what I experienced. He's actually been fired from the university, which is very unfortunate, which hurt me a lot. He's just not a teacher, but a counselor, a father figure, a mentor, a leader. Not just to me, but I feel like he definitely affected a lot of my life because a lot of my perception has changed talking to this man and speaking to him personally. But just a lot of students that he actually impacted, and I can honestly say our founder, Ms. Bethune-Cookman, he has his teachings and just the way his thoughts is implements a lot of her what she believed in. And without him, I just don't feel like the school is the same.
Okay. You know, Dr. Randy Short had brought this situation to my attention a few weeks back, and I did get a chance to speak with Brother Raphael Jackson, Professor Raphael Jackson. We're going to try to get him on for next week to follow up and find out more about what has happened. But as you've stated, and I think we're going to bring Dr. Randy Short in a few moments. I think I see him on our boards as well. But for what you are saying, Brother Daniel, this brother has been fired from the college, from this so-called historically black college. And again, help me get some clarity as to why this has happened.
Well, society has a way of doing things of what we call like a certain way of teaching or the proper way of teaching. And my thing is, What really is the proper way of teaching? What is the really proper way of learning? Everyone learns in their own way. And he had his own way. His is more verbal and personable. And the university just disagreed. I don't want to throw salt on my university because I do attend to this school, and I believe it's a great university. But I feel like it can be greater than what it is. And I feel like he was the man to do the job. And he had the attitude and just the spirit of rubbing off and giving the energy to give students the influence to do things and actually better themselves. And it's like, it's like, you know, textbook teaching. He always said, you know, you limit yourself when you put an expectation on it, but when you allow yourself to go in vulnerable and just receive every single thing, and you are the person that you are the ones, the sole proprietor, to actually differentiate the good and the bad through life and just situations, period. And regardless if you like it or not, to get to the next task, you have to go through this. So don't put, again, a standard on it and what needs to be done or what has to be done. Just do what needs to be done versus what, okay, this is what I have to do and this is what I have to do. I have to get an A, I have to get a B, whatever the case may be. Just go in there vulnerable and just receive every single thing you need to do. And I feel like, you know, a lot of the different teachers and different just classes that I've experienced, you know, I can't honestly say I remember anything that what I learned, but going to his class and the personal experience, that verbal experience, and just actually connecting with the class, you know, when it comes to black history, we've been taught a lot of, you know, we came from Africa, we were non-domesticated creatures, we came here, what they did to us was wrong, and this is predicting where we are now, and why can't we get along? Why can't we do this and why can't we do that? And it's all of inequities of, you know, past history and just a vicious cycle. And I feel like he was the person that allowed us to actually see that, because a lot of history books, it's lies, it's sugar-coated, and it's just watered down, and it's just not the truth. And I feel like, you know, just a knowledge of self is what us as a people really need, because nowadays it's like we're really lost. And to be honest, I mean, I'm not necessarily a prejudiced person, but I really feel for only really my people, because at the end of the day, we own only half, 1% of half of businesses in this country. We when it comes to TV, we're marketed as, you know, entertainers and just entertainers. You know, we're more than that. We were once kings and queens, and just he actually expressed that and tried to implement and let you know that you are more than what you are. Society and your own beliefs and just from family and whoever you hang around with hinders yourself. Once you get over that, now you can get to the next task and actually be better than who you are. At the end of the day, you limit yourself, no one else.
I know that's right. Well, my brother, I want you to stay right there. And what we're going to do is we're going to bring in a couple of callers. And I do believe we have Dr. Randy Short that's going to join us. And also, caller, you're at 7169. We're going to bring you in a few moments also, so just stay right there. We're coming right to you. Just want to bring in Dr. Randy Short to, you know, give us a little more insight into this situation. And, of course, having experienced some of that himself, he certainly knows firsthand how difficult it can be when you bring forward truth and power through the education or education system.
Right.
Short, we got you here.
Yes. How are you?
Greetings, brother. How are you this evening?
Good. And I'm good. And I was just hearing this young man speak. I'm proud that he is sticking up for his professor. And as much as you know, I've been fired illegally once. And the other time it was legal, but it was really unfair. And then I know what it's like to be blackballed, so you're not allowed to get back in. Something y'all need to know, Raphael Jackson is a gentle giant. He's been married twice. The kids, everybody loves Jackson, everyone, except for the people in that school who either want the kids in jail to be homosexuals or to be weaklings and intellectually crippled. The president of the school is closet queen. That's one reason they don't like Jackson. A lot of these schools, and I'm not picking on anyone. I got gay family members, friends, but I tell them the truth. Last night I did my show. It's called Free at Ass, and was talking about the fact that black homosexuals get preferential treatment over blacks that are not heterosexual, and it's wrong. It's wrong as Jim Crow. That's the big thing down there. And the president of the school and them, it's alleged, went on a sex trip to the Dominican Republic on the student's dime, and yet they don't have money for students to have books. They don't have money to fix up the dormitories or the food. They don't have money for good faculty. They got a lot of foreigners and whites that hate black people on payroll. They have a police force that is exclusively white. They promote a culture of sadness, so some of the young folks smoke a little weed, and then they have the white cops on their campus arrest them. So they have money for white cops to brutalize the students on the campus, but don't have money for recreation, for student activities, for guest speakers. That's the same thing at the school I used to be at, Lane College, where the president died from AIDS at the beginning of the year. And I praise God when I heard. That's Lane College. The people are stealing everything. You have to sleep with folks. All of the qualified people get fired or run out of the schools. I've got 4 graduate degrees. I know what it's like to not even be considered, yet they'll get a foreigner with an accent so thick cheddar cheese couldn't stand next to how these people sound. You have white folks who don't educate. And also, Cookman, like all the other schools, they have a lot of pedophiles and people down there having sex with the students and staff. They come in there to screw our girls. Oh, yes. Jackson's not one of those. So that's Jackson's problem. They're not paying Jackson what he's worth. I know what that's like, too. It's amazing the kinds of stuff that happen. I should have been hired to work at Cookman. Do you know that they kept hiring people's brothers or someone else over me? I didn't even get interviewed. At least make it look good and reject me. Don't take someone with a master's degree, I'm ABD, PhD, with two other masters, and you can't even say hi, well, we didn't think so. That's the kind of corruption and fraud down there. And there are other things. The faculty down there systematically target young black men to fail. The class that this young man took with Jackson was meant to make Jackson fail, to make the young people hate him, so they would report to him, report to the president of this, that Jackson was a bad guy so he could be fired. The way that they run these HBCUs is they pit the students, who often don't know, against the committed faculty. That way they use the students to destroy the academic careers of the committed teachers. And that's the game that's played. So someone like you, Sister Empress, could go in to teach, be on fire, them not want you there, and they give you a class like they want to give Jackson a class with over 100 people in it with no assistance. I mean, to make you fail and then get you for failing. Jackson's a master teacher within the Black Panthers, within the Nation of Islam, has been in all the different movements. Very
wow.
committed. Mm-hmm. He gets to work early in the morning. It's common for him to call me at 9 at night. He got to work at 8, and he was still there at 9. He goes into his office on the weekends. I know what it's like at the HBCUs, the white professors, the black professors are the predators, are gay, or they don't love their own black folks. They leave the campus as soon as they can, like at 2, 3 o'clock. So if Jackson's there at 9 o'clock at night on average, that means he's putting his whole life in to help these young people. On many times, he's called me in the middle of the night, and we've sat down and written up letters to fight to keep the school from destroying students' lives. This is the kind of man he is. He's trying to bring money in. They've blocked it. And I've got to give you one more thing. I'm going to stop. Do you know at that school they have about 200 faculty, Sister Empress? They have less than 6 black male faculty. How in the hell does an HBCU have less than 2% of its faculty as African-American men? So, I mean, how do you get in that school? If you're just gay or if you're just a foreigner, if you're just white, in fact, the people that run the human resources there are folks who come from Liberty University. So the white national supremacist school, Liberty University, Jerry Falwell, that big fat F-word, who thank God he's not living, his people decide who gets to teach folks like this young man. And there's nothing you can do about it, which is why if I apply, they look and they see my background, they see Howard, they see something else. I'm not eligible to teach my own kind.
Mm-hmm.
And Jackson, they've been setting him up to run him out for years because the history department is run by white folks and lesbians. There's this black half-breed lesbian that hates black folks who can't teach. And all the students love him. So since the students will keep going to him, they decide, because no one will register in their classes, but they're still getting paid more than him, they run him out so they can have students who they have nothing to share. And that's how it is at HBCU. Money's missing. One of the people that used to work in administration and handle the money, he died of a massive heart attack. How would you go to any of these schools? You'll find the most committed people, they retire or they die a cancer or a sudden death because they're carrying all the weight because each one of these HBCUs is a plantation for white supremacy. And it's people like Jackson or myself, we're the ones the students like. We're the ones that change the students' lives, and they literally drive those people out, work them to death, or frustrate them. There was a man that the students liked that had 2 PhDs. They fired him, replaced him with someone white. And it just, so your ability, your competence, your training, your commitment, if you're black, in particular if you're male,
doesn't matter. And what are they using? Now Cookman is a prison to pipeline college, which many of the black colleges, it's not no longer just the high schools or the junior high schools and the middle schools or the elementary schools. Now many of the HBCUs engender a culture where drug abuse, alcoholism, and sexual abuse, pimping, rape of a woman, mean it becomes a crime scene where people pay to be there. And that's the situation down there. The young folks and anyone that can touch them and inspire them become a threat. That's why I'm not at Lane. Students like me. They tried to fire me. I beg the students not to get upset. They threatened to close the school. I had to be fired. It didn't matter if I told them don't do it. I was told your presence is dangerous. You could tell them not to shut the school, and they'll do it anyway. And this parallels over 100,000 African-American teachers being fired and public schools across the country. You go to these charter schools, it's full of white faggots, pedophiles, and child molesters, and folks who don't understand us there to either put our kids on paper, put them on Ritalin or Adderall or something to make them out that they're psychotic or make them discouraged so they go to jail or faggotize them. This is what's being done to us in the name of education, which basically means open up and say ah or bend over and cough. That's not education. Reading, writing, and arithmetic has been replaced by reefer, Ritalin, and rectums. Now we need to stand up to that.
All right. Well, I'm sure our callers got some comments and responses on some of this. We're talking, of course, with Dr. Randy Short, and we're talking about a particular situation that has occurred at the Bethune-Cookman College, but certainly, as it's been indicated, this is an issue and a problem that's going on all over the country. We're going to open up the phone lines for you all, and let's see, caller, we thank you for holding in there for such a while. We're going to open up your mic now. You're at 71. Looks like 6-9. We're going to open up your mic. You have a comment or a question for us tonight? I'm sorry, 7-1-8-9.
Yes, greetings. I'm so laughing at Dr. Short. Reefer, Ritalin, and rectums. I'm enjoying the show. I did not know about Professor Short being fired at Lane. And I'm just finding out about this Professor Jackson at Bethune-Cookman, but it's just more the same. It seems the saga continues. Waleen Rudy was fired at Morehouse. Francis Cresswell was fired at Howard. Jahi Issa was fired at Dell State. The list just continues. People who try to shed some light and some guidance, you know, they're attacked. So I'm enjoying the show. And
we could go back. Toni Morrison was fired from Howard. Du Bois was fired from Howard. Tony Brown was fired from Howard. All these HBCUs, they don't let them teach. They don't let us teach. They don't let us help.
They talk about her school on the radio, too.
They don't want us teaching our young people. They understand that the movement of the 50, all the way, there's a book called The New Negro on Campus. Y'all need to get your hands on it. The New Negro on Campus, it may be out of print. Go to your library, and it talks about the black student movement in this country started in the 1920s because of conditions like what we have right now. One of the first places was in Nashville. Literally, they took a student off the campus of Fisk and lynched him at Springfield, Tennessee. The college president let them take a black man and murder him as long as the doors of the school stayed open and there was some income for the administrators and for some of the teachers. I mean, and the same thing is going on. Cookman, they had a white professor who was selling dope. They let him stay. They let the white man pushing dope to our kids stay. And they tried to fire people like Jackson.
You talking about eventually my school.
Okay, somebody's got a lot of stuff going on in the background there. I'm not sure who it is, but you need to do one thing or the other, either leave from that area or mute your phone, because all of its feedback is coming through. Thank you, caller.
Are you hearing me, sister? That's the kind of corruption at the school. Like Howard University is now, it's in the red. They've been stealing money up at Howard. In fact, they fired about 7% of the workforce. In fact, they fired Professor Santiago Maurer, a good brother. He got fired from Bowie before that. All the young men I know that are committed get fired. Every single one. Every single one. But, God, if you're gay, and I ain't mad at anybody gay, I mean, shoot, you got to wear the Depends, not me.
Professor, I'm trying to think of his name, Greg Carr at Howard. Is he coming into attack?
Greg Carr is really liked by some of the people. But we have to remember, Greg Carr almost didn't get to become Dr. Greg Carr because Malicia Sante him.
Mm-hmm.
So Greg Carr is lucky, but I'll say this of Greg Carr. Beautiful brother, good man, but his department doesn't offer PhDs. So he's in a department that's Black Studies or African American Studies or whatever you want to call it. It's a department that's only for undergraduates. So he's just not much of a threat on a certain level. Carr is popular with the students, and Carr's made some friends. Good man. No beefs with Carr. I'm surprised they have not fired him. It's a miracle.
Mm-hmm.
It's a miracle that they haven't fired Carr or found something against him. And I thank God. He's the kind of person that you want your children to have teach you at an HBCU. And it shouldn't be a miracle. There should be 100 cars.
Mm-hmm.
I should be up there. And we're not. And if you learn that the HBCUs, the way that they treat the teachers, they have 7. I had 8 classes one semester.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a full load is 4.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to publish and be competitive, because we have a Jim Crow track college system, and that's what's going on. The white people don't care how much the HBCU president and the administrator are full of people who have sex with each other. They're either Delta or they're Q or they're Sigma or they're Kappa or they're Eastern Star or Mason. They don't care about these folks stealing the rest of us blind, provided that they don't produce people like, forgive me, her name's escaping me, Gloria Richardson. Or Stokely Carmichael, a.k.a. Kwame Ture, or H-Rap Brown, now known as Imam Jamil Al-Amin. HBCUs are not supposed to create people like that. How do you stop them from creating thinking people? It's get rid of professors like Raphael Jackson, Jahi Issa, who's a colleague. We both went to Howard together. There's a systematic purge across this country in both the HBCUs and the white schools to get rid of the people who promote consciousness, and many times they use people I call Contis. Contis are continental Africans that don't give 2 dams about blacks in America. They are some of our worst enemies. I wouldn't have a PhD were it left to some of the African professors who would teach all the women that were black were whores. And I had to tell this man to his face his wife was going to leave him for an African-American man that week, which she did. And he decided I wasn't supposed to get a PhD.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Issa, a Jew, a dirty Zionist Jew, his name will come to me. He tried to make certain that Issa didn't even get money to get through the program at Howard University. I warned him about it. He didn't believe it didn't happen. So we don't even get to the point of teaching half the time because within even these HBCUs, they untrust white people or Conti or my other word, Trucks. Those are blacks from the Caribbean that are Ku Klux Klansmen that like curry goat. I mean, they're a problem too. So you don't just have white folk and black necks. You got these foreign Negroes who see the HBCUs as a piggy bank for them to get money because their degrees aren't as good as the ones earned here and to screw our girls and boys.
Mm-hmm.
And Cookman has had one case after the other of foreign teachers molesting our sisters down there. And that's a big story, and that's why you have high rates of HIV, AIDS, and all kinds of diseases at these HBCUs, because you have dirty crooked, hedonistic, Greek letter and Masonic folks running it who don't give a damn about us, and yet they always say education's the key. And, you know, the key is simply their private part they want to put in your hole.
let's bring in the young brother from Bethune. Dan, are you still there?
Yes, how are you? How are you?
Okay.
Oh, man.
Okay. So, Dan, tell me, what, as a student, what do you think some of the responses should be? Or what, as a student and then as a community, what do you think some of the things we could try to do to help Professor Jack?
Hello? Hello? Hello?
Okay.
Hello?
Somebody has a phone there. Yes, go ahead. We hear you.
Yeah. I can't necessarily say. I mean, I wanted to start a campaign and a foundation for him. I feel his passion is teaching. I feel like no one should ever be ripped from their passion, but not only just a passion, but actually someone that's actually changed lives and done things. So I feel like possibly a campaign for him. I wanted to come back and say free Dr. Jack. And in the back of the shirt, I wanted to talk about all the things that what he is as a person, just not only a teacher, but a leader, again, a mentor, a role model, a counselor, you know, anyone that you can even talk to. He's the first person I know. He's a 75-year-old man. I can't talk to anyone like I can him, not my mother, not my grandparents, not my own father. I didn't know the man from a can of paint, but I can relate to him more than anybody known in my life, and that means a lot to me. And I feel like a lot of people experience that also, and I feel like if I can just have a shirt with his face on it and his name, and just let people know what he was and what he is, and that would make people realize, like, okay, who really is this person? Let me get to know this person. Why isn't this person here? And if I can just do that, that would just mean the world. But I mean, I just want to just keep his name alive and just keep people knowledgeable about who he is. And at the end of the day, the school has made the biggest mistake. I feel like he's the heartbeat of our school. I forget the gentleman's name. I apologize, but he's eradicated a lot of different things. That is the truth of my school, and a lot was going on. And again, rest in peace, Mr. Averett. He did pass of a massive heart attack in his office a couple days ago. I want to talk more about my school and what's going on and just conditions, but again, I don't want to throw salt on my school because my teacher warned me about that, and it's something I shouldn't do. But I'm sorry?
Memphis, may I interrupt for a moment?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Young brother,
uh-huh.
I think you should talk to your professor
because
okay. I appreciate what you're saying out of care and concern, but I think that you're going to bring a tax upon yourself. And I think your initial goal was to go there, get your credentials, and move on with your life. Talk with your Professor Jackson to see if he thinks it wise for you to put yourself at risk of retaliation, because, as you said, he's an elder and he's already accomplished his, and I don't think he would want you to be attacked or put at risk at this point in the game, and because in the end, it's going to be business as usual. They're going to fire who they want to, and they're going to promote who they want to. I think you need to protect yourself. We know that you care. We know that you want real education, but right now, it's important that you understand you're behind enemy lines, and you
right.
need to get what you need to get and move on.
I want to emphasize, young brother, he's not telling you not to be a man. He's telling
okay.
you how to be a man because you're in a different sort of battlefield from anything you're in before. I'm going to say to you, having gone to four different colleges, Howard, University of Virginia, Harvard University, and Emmanuel College, when you're a black man in an academic environment, it's like you have a bullseye on all your vital organs the minute you stepped in there. And you've got to learn how to fight, as I say to Jackson, fight like you're white. What you're doing now is brave, and I'm not trying to cast any aspersion on it, but he's right. I'm saying this to you as a person who was on the Board of Trustees at Howard. As a student activist,
I know what it's like to have a dean of students assault me in broad daylight. I had the same dean of students assault me in front of my mother before my dissertation defense. And
wow.
I couldn't hit back. I ran from him to keep him from harming me because all he'd have to do is say, I hit him. And the school that has millions of dollars, this is what HBCUs do that you don't know. When they do something wrong to someone, they will spend millions of dollars just to crush you. The same way that they don't have money for the dorms, or they don't have money for Kotex in the girls' bathroom, or toilet paper, or soap, they have millions if you take them in the white man's court. In fact, Cookman, the way that they work, they take all the money that they get, and they give it to all the white power establishment. That's why they're allowed to be corrupt. And when you go into the court, which is corrupt, dominated by Zionist Jews, I told folks Trayvon Martin was never going to get justice, dead or alive.
Agreed.
When you go into court, you are basically, if you know anything about the 13th Amendment, you are not a citizen of this country due to the 13th Amendment. It emancipated you, but it didn't make you equal, didn't make you free. You go into the court where these people, that school is an engine for the county that you're in, bring all that money. They would rather destroy you and help continue to keep the corrupt money coming, because as long as it's not building you up, they're doing everything that they want them to do. It's the same way they don't stop pimps and liquor stores and stores that sell bad food with high fructose corn syrup and other poisons in our community. That's what a lot of HBCUs. You look at HBCUs and they're always in communities run down. How come they never invest? Because they don't want them. And these schools have tens of millions of dollars in their budget. They can fix it up using student workers. They don't do it because they pay white people for the opportunity to hurt you. So what this man is saying to you is, please graduate, because you'd be more useful to us having graduated than like my cousin that got married two Saturdays ago, who helped lead the student rebellion at Howard University in 1968, and he's never able to graduate or get an advanced degree because he's blackballed. Take it from someone who is blackballed, who can tell you that I can apply for dog catching. They'll tell me no because I raise hell. I'm not afraid of that. I'm almost 50, but you need to somehow get on your feet so you can stand. Jackson, I know Jackson, we talk every day, every single day, and I can tell you that Jackson should tell you that Howard University screwed him. He was too good a man. They didn't want him in the doctoral program. Same, a little nasty guy from Mozambique. And the same person was my dissertation advisor, Blackball Jackson. That's why he's not Dr. Jackson, although he's more than worthy of the PhD. Are you understanding me?
Yes, sir.
People, look at how smart he is, and imagine he was only allowed to get to the master's level because he is able. They see a young leader like you. Trust me, you already have a file. If you don't believe me, Snowden just put the stuff up. I mean, not that we knew about, I mean, Snowden's not shit to me anyway. We knew about COINTELPRO going back a long time ago. They're watching you, and they're not going to ever stop watching you, but you cannot give. Let me tell you, what you're doing now, if you're not careful, it's like going to a new child molester beach with no drawers on and laying face down. So I want you to protect yourself. Protect yourself, brother, because there's so few. Most of the other brothers, they just want to stick it in easy, come out greasy, and get high. We need you to have your credential. Even if you're working in Walmart, you can use that education a year or two later. But they don't want you to get out. And I'm just telling you, I've been through it at UVA. They kicked out most of us that were integrated the school. At Howard, they tried to kick me out and validated my classes. At Howard, they stole my application file to deny I even went to the school.
Wow.
Okay? It's real. And luckily for me, the secretaries were all friends to my mother. They literally, I'm just telling you, people decided to destroy the very application package. They went in and stole it. This is how these niggas operate. They aren't our friends. I call them blacknecks. They're traitors. And if we were revolutionary people, I'm sorry, a whole lot of black folks, man, the firing range would be full. I mean,
all right.
All right, we're going to go to another caller. Let's see. And also, family, if you have a question or a comment or you want to join in on this dialogue, you can push 1 now, and we'd certainly be more than happy to bring you in. We're going to go back to Sister Pope, I think, who has some comment or something that she wants to share with us. We're going to open up her mic. And again, if any of you have a question or a comment or you want to bring something into this dialogue, please push 1 now. Sister Coca, do you have a comment or a question for us tonight on this topic?
I'm just so thankful the man is speaking the truth.
Mm.
And I'm sitting here looking at all I've been through and how similar it is to what he's going through right now. And I just want to say, just stay in prayer and keep doing what you're doing because it needs to be done. And do it fearlessly because it's right. And when you're doing it right and you're doing what you're supposed to do, nothing can harm you, really. And thank you so much for all you're doing and continue.
All right, my sister, and we thank you again. Okay, we're going to go to another caller here at 3662. We're going to open up your mic. You have a question or a comment or something you want to share with us tonight?
Yes.
3662, you're open.
Thank you, and this is a very healthy conversation as usual. And I would say to the young man, another testimony here, be careful, we need you. Same thing happened to me with the professor there, Jackson, over at Bethune-Cookman. This is the kind of thing that they do not like for you to do. He does that fourth and fifth grade free summer for children in the community to come in and run across that campus and to think that they can do something. There is probably has been a proclamation throughout the world with black people here in America to purge every one of us who really is committed to making sure that our children learn and make sure that our children become independent thinkers, think for themselves. And it's not going to get any better because the Koch brothers have just donated millions to the United Negro College Fund. So now the Koch brothers have a seat on the historically black colleges entree into that system. And so, we've got to, it's so good that you came on and you are courageous.
Howard University, just to show you how deep this is, how traitorous these sellout blacks are, Howard University, which is the largest business in the greater D.C. area, we're talking about the area of 6, 7, 8 million people, they had a no-bid contract for paper with the Koch brothers. They wouldn't even allow a black vendor to even, I mean, they're talking about they opened up the bid. Actually, they didn't even do a bid. It was a closed bid. Should have been public just to do business with the people who paid our guts. This, since you mentioned the Koch brothers, long before that, and you need to understand, all of y'all that like President Obama, aside from looking like a mulatto, my favorite Martian, not doing anything for our people. I mean, he has stolen by not giving money the equivalent of $500 million taken away from HBCUs in his first 4 years. Then his whole administration, they have no commitment to the continuance of HBCUs. This is what Dr. Issa found out. That's the reason he's also in trouble. Also, the HBCU in D.C., the District of Columbia, UDC, the guy who's the president, these folks have a white mentor that's recruited black men who are effeminate or weak, whose commitment is to get rid of black consciousness and to promote same-sex agenda at the schools. And these people have been put in these positions, so they're funded. And so understand the structure to that, young brother. If the Koch brothers, who don't even think black should be, and we should say their name right. You didn't say it right, sister. Koch brothers, they're Jews. Next time they cry some crocodile tears over Schwerner and Goodman, you tell them, stick it up their ass, what about the Koch brothers? What about Booker T. Benjamin, the Jewish vice president of the Confederacy that allowed black men to be murdered in Union uniforms? We need to understand we got enemies. We don't have any friends but ourselves, the folks in the diaspora, and the Almighty and our ancestors. And we need to deal with it. Koch brothers, start saying it right. They started blocking me on Press TV, Sister Empress, when I busted out that Jewish pedophile over in London. They're often behind that because they are the middle managers of our people. We constitute a group of 60 million people that are essentially slaves. Everything that we do and produce goes to them. That's slavery, whether you've got a condom on or don't, whether you can read or write or live in a gated community with an ugly white wife that looks like something out of a Dunkin' Donut dumpster, you aren't free.
Point of clarity, do they not pronounce it Coke? Because I saw something or heard something.
We need to say what it is. It was Mayor Koch, the little homosexual one that strung up those seven boys. It's Koch for him. It's Koch for him, too. They like hiding when they are something. Okay? We need to start calling things out. When things happen to us, like when Lehman Brothers started the subprime loans, the same Lehman Brothers that were invested in the slave market down in Selma, Alabama, that these are Jews involved and abusing us, along with the Anglos and others. We need to call it what it is because you see all these so-called fake liberal progressives, a lot of them are Jews playing both ends, getting funded by their own folks while they act like they're helping us. And then you don't say it right, so they don't have to confront the wickedness in their own community the same way they don't confront the mass murder of Palestinians, many of which are black. We need to call them out. They're not our friends. They run the NAACP. They run everything. They run porno, and they run hip-hop and rap. That's why all of our kids are being faggotized and drugged up. We need to get them out. Who caused Whitney Houston to die and Phyllis Hyman to die? And who had Sly Stone on dope? That little faggot called Clive Davis. That's what's running our people. We need to get the middlemen. We need the Trumps and the Contis, and we also need these Jews, these Zionist racist Jews, out of our lives. They can't be our friends if they've got one-third of the billionaires and everything else, and they're our friends, and we're not 1%. Are you kidding me? Who do you think dominates these HBCUs? Howard University, by the way, your guy Carr, that someone brought up, Carr has to be careful because the ADL essentially runs his department, in case he didn't tell you that. You have to watch what you say and teach about black people. You can't teach political economy and black self-determination and human rights because the ADL is sitting there watching. In fact, they published a document, if they stopped, but they did for many years, you had to have the approval of Jews to even teach your own history at Howard University.
Mm. Wow.
And I'm part Jewish, and if you call me anti-Semitic, tell them it's with good damn cause.
All right. Okay, we're going to go to another caller. We're going to open up your lines, caller. You are at 3145. We're going to open up your mic. Okay, we got you. 3145. Your mic is open.
Hello?
Okay. Did we lose you before, Daniel? Oh, okay.
I got disconnected. It's cool. I just wanted to, I have another, actually a statement. You asked me earlier, what can I do to actually make things better input on just, you know, how to handle things and just how they target young black brothers. And it's funny how you say all this because Dr. Jackson has warned me about all this. This is conversations I've had with him, but, again, he told me, again, you know, you gotta put your emotions to the side at times. You know, this is business right here, and you have to there's no place for emotion. So, again, I appreciate that. But knowledge of self, what I'm trying to influence with others and just people I know is if you haven't heard the documentary of Hidden Colors, it literally speaks on every single thing you guys are talking about. Today, I just grabbed the third edition from a place called Black and Nobel that's in my city. It's a place of knowledge of self, a lot of books within the community. And,
yeah, we're familiar with them. See, but keep in mind, you're on a program with folks who are kind of in tune with a lot of this. So
yeah,
we're not in Daytona Beach, baby.
We up here in a semi-liberated zone, not much liberated. In fact, D.C. is so gentrified, you know, I'm not surprised my behind has to turn white. Everything's going white up in here. My bowel movements turn white. They just move in
wait,
so much.
No, wait, can I say something? Can I say something real quick? Yeah, the hidden colors, and too, I just, Tyson, the founder of Black and Nobel, told me to, when I go back down to school, I actually want to make a documentary on Dr. Jackson and actually send it to to Black and Nobel. And actually, just having a teacher that's actually, you know, worked at HBCUs and been through, again, all the nonsense and that you guys all been through, and just actually someone actually talking about it, because they don't have any DVDs or actually people speaking out about that, and that's something actually I want to do. I actually had to think about it before. I was talking a little bit on the emotional side earlier, but actually on a business note, and actually something I can do that would keep me out of the hot water and actually endanger, again, my education and everything. But yeah, just expressing kids, you know, hidden color amongst my peers, hidden colors, to know the truth and make a documentary on Dr. Jackson, because I believe a lot of people benefit from it. That's all.
Okay.
So if you make a documentary, will that expose you?
No, because, I mean, yes and no, because I'm not necessarily saying anything. I would keep my name anonymous. I'll keep it unanimous. It's more so I'm just talking to her and have her conversation. I won't add my name. It's just a documentary, just talking to the man and just the flow of conversation that we always typically have, and just about, you know, just the unfair treatment of Black people and the disaster that hasn't stopped when it comes to our people, when it comes psychologically, when it comes, again, like you said, with the music videos, with the entertainment, with the TV, everything in this society is built that, you know, psychologically is having our people to act a certain way. And that's why we're still in the same vicious cycle that we're in now today.
Okay. All right. Well, my brother, we certainly thank you for sharing this information with us. And for next week, hopefully, we'll be able to have Professor Jackson on.
Or
insight.
Okay.
We're going to certainly work for that. And now, just so that we know, what is your major? What are you actually pursuing?
I'm a business and major in business and minor in psychology.
Okay, very good, very good. All right. So since you are doing a minor in psychology, let me ask, are you familiar with people like Dr. Amos Wilson, of course, Dr. Francis Kreswousing, Dr. Bobby Wright? Have you read or seen any of the works of any of them?
No, but a book that Dr. Jackson has had me to read was I don't want to see Carnegie Wilson. I got the name wrong, but it's called How to Make Friends and Become a Leader. That book again changed my perception a lot, because I'm a radical type person. You know, I'm very strong minded. I know a lot of things, and I have a way of throwing things on people, so it's kind of easing my mind on, you know, to again, everyone learns different, everyone receives things different, so it's kind of the book, again, it's like a psychology book. It's telling you to neutralize yourself so that you can actually be able to talk to people and understand people, versus just putting how you feel, what you want them to think, but just actually allowing them to express themselves, so you can kind of sort of just have them to understand, you know, just come at a more humble approach, versus this is what it is, this is what I'm trying to tell you.
Good Brother Frazier, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
The three people that Empress recommended to you, go to them, Google them, or look them up on YouTube, and allow their message to be your foundation. Amos Wilson.
Yes.
Bobby Wright, especially Amos Wilson and Bobby Wright. And
okay.
Then Chris Welding has a good perspective on why they hate us so. But especially Amos Wilson and Bobby Wright.
Yeah.
Once you open your mind to the message, they'll be your bedrock. They'll be your foundation.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And
like
it's Wilson and Bobby Ray.
Absolutely. And there's just a few more, my brother, that you may want to also look into further. And again, these are scholars par excellence. That's the only way I can really put it at this point. And in specifically the area of psychology.
Okay.
So if you're talking about psychology and you have not familiarized yourself with these giants, then your perspective might not be where you would want it to be and where it should be, because these folks pioneers. They're groundbreaking. Now, the other two that I would like to give to you is Dr. Nathan Hare and Dr. Julia Hare. Okay, so again, that's Dr. Bobby Wright, Dr. Francis Quest Welsing, the incredible Dr. Amos Wilson, and then the other two is Dr. Nathan Hare and Dr. Julia Hare. Okay, they want you check out any of them. I'm certain you will continue to search more information because they are just incredible, all of them. Okay. Very good. All right. We're going to ask once again before we close this segment out, does someone have a question, comment, or something else you'd like to bring in for us tonight? And if not, we're going to move into our tribute to Sister Asada Shakur and Mother Ida B. Wells and give you a little insight into what we're going to talk about next week with talking about the necessity of homeschooling. I mean, we've got to do this now. We've talked about it enough. Well, we are truly confronted with it now, without a doubt. And as you can hear, we not only have to talk about homeschooling as it pertains to preschool and elementary, but we got to start looking at higher education too, for real, for real. But we'll talk about that more next week. So, again, if there's someone who has a comment or a question for us tonight or something else you'd like to bring into this particular dialogue, please push one now, and we will certainly bring you in. In the meantime, let me see. I think we still have Sister Hattie with us. I just wanted to let everyone know, if you're not familiar with Sister Hattie, she definitely brings a lot of insight into the dialogue, being a former principal and educator, of course, in the area that she resides in. You know, we have callers and listeners from all over the country and even in other countries, by the way. So, you know, you all are definitely getting a lot of good information and insight every week, and we are so appreciative and thankful for that. And this sounds like Brother Ngozi was with us a few moments ago. Brother Ngozi, was that you?
Yes, ma'am. This is a fantastic show, office. And Dr. Short, man, woo! Very good, very good.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Brother Ngozi, as usual. All right, family, we are going to close this segment out since it seems like there's no one else that has a comment or question for us. We're going to close this segment out, and we're going to go into our tribute of Asada Shakur, reminding you we still say hands off Asada. Before we do, we want to give you a brief update. As Sister Coker mentioned a little while ago, she talked about O.J. as being, incarcerated at some point. But we want to talk about a real political prisoner, Iman Jamil Al-Amin. For those of you who do not know, Iman Jamil Al-Amin has been very, very ill in these past few weeks, and there's been an emergency call that has gone out to support him getting medical treatment. It started out with some dental concerns, and as it turns out, it appears that he has now been diagnosed with cancer and is in real need of some real medical attention. We did receive word today that it appears he has been moved to another facility, which seems that that is the intent to begin to provide him with some other kinds of medical treatment. So we will keep you posted on that. We will know the specifics on that within the next couple of days. But it does seem like the calls and the emails and the other letters and things that have gone to the prison has worked. It has helped. So we thank all of you again. Okay, Brother Daniel, we want to thank you And maybe you can call back in next week. We're going to certainly try to get our brother in next week to really, you know, give us some further insight, and we certainly invite you to join us as well. Okay, I think we might have lost him, but that's okay. I will give him a call later and let him know that we're inviting him back. All right, and Brother Ngozi, we thank you for your input as well.
You're welcome.
All right, family, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk a little more about Sister Asada Shakur. And also, for those of you who have heard of Mother Ida B. Wells, well, we're going to talk a little more about her as well, both born this month of July. And we're going to also talk to you about what's happening this coming week with our Queen Mother Moore Weekend. We're going to be at the UNIA starting on Thursday here in Philly, the historic international UNIA. We're going to be here 16th Cecil B. Moore, 1609 to 11 Cecil B. Moore for our kickoff for our Queen Mother Moore Weekend. We'll tell you more about that in a few minutes. We'll be right back. And we're back. And again, we want to thank all of you for tuning into this segment of New Day, Resurrection, and Liberation. We are going to share with you a little bit of information. And before we do, we want to remind you, hands off Asada.
Leaders in the same organizations against each other. In New York, where I was, what they did was they arrested in, I think it was 1968, I'm not very clear on the date, I don't remember at this moment. They arrested on charges of conspiracy 21 of our most effective activists, our most effective leaders.
Now it's restricted for a second. Please be on wheel drive 4015 RX
3. We're sorry about that. We had a little technical problem there for a moment. We're going to correct it for you. Here we are.
We're trying to liberate our imprisoned comrades. Even though they were given bail, the bail was $100,000 apiece, and only a few of them we were able to bail out. I think that we cannot look at the Black Panther Party in the past. We cannot look at the Black Liberation Movement as something in the past. African people are still not free, and there are still many, many political prisoners in the United States. It is time for us to demand total, immediate amnesty for all political prisoners and prisoners of war. If we do not take ourselves seriously, if we do not take our movement seriously, then we will have to hang our heads in front of our ancestors.
That was none other than Sister Asada Shakur. And needless to say, there's a $2 million bounty that's still on her head. she is the only woman on the FBI terrorist, so-called terrorist list. Now, we feel it's important that we bring that to your attention because, as you know, there is still an embargo going on in Cuba or against Cuba, and so we have to be always very mindful, very careful of, you know, what's going on. Let us not get distracted. There's a lot going on, of course, in Gaza. There's a lot going on in so-called Russia. But, again, let's be very clear. This government definitely wants our sister, Queen Assata Shakur, who is a very, very significant person in the struggle for African is particularly in the U.S. In the spirit of Queen Mother Moore, who, of course, we will be talking more about next week, Assata Shakur certainly represented and was certainly showed us a lot that Queen Mother Moore taught.
In a room, isolated for something like 4 or 5 days, I was beaten, tortured. It was a hellish experience. No one was permitted to see me. My aunt, who is also my lawyer, Evelyn Williams, had to get a court order for her and my mother and my sister to come and see me. I was in prison altogether 6.5 years. I spent more than 2.5 years in solitary confinement. Much of that was in men's prisons. In other words, I was the only woman. Even though they say that there are no political prisoners in the United States, I was kept in solitary confinement, kept in men's prisons because of my political beliefs. When you figure that one out. When it was prison was hell. It was a new kind of plantation. I feel like a maroon woman. I feel like an escaped slave because what I saw in the United States in those prisons was slavery. It was black people with chains in cells. It was just poor people, you know, I mean, just stepped on and smashed. I'll never forget what I saw. I'll never forget where I've lived through. I'll never forget what my people have lived through.
Again, we pay tribute to Sister Assata Shakur. And we will talk more about our sister next week when we do our tribute to and commemorate the life and legacy of Queen Mother Moore. Well, family, we are going to get ready to close out this segment. But before we do, we want to also remind you again, there's another sister that we also pay tribute to, and that is Mother Ida B. Wells. We're going to hear a little more from Sister Assata before we tell you more about Mother Ida B. Wells.
We started to feel an attraction, to feel like human beings again, I guess it's the word for it. And the subject of sex came up, and we thought about it, and we talked about it. And it was very heavy. It was a heavy, heavy thing because, you know, I didn't know how to feel. Because so much that was around us was like slavery, you know what I mean? It was like very clear they were out to wipe us out. And it wasn't any fantasy, it wasn't any joke. They were out to take our heads. And, you know, I felt like a slave. I'm sure he must have felt just like a slave. And we said, well, how could we even think about bringing a child into this world? But then what other world is there to bring a child in? I mean, the world is a terrible place. And, you know, and I thought about my mother, my grandmother, my great great, great grandmothers and what they must have thought about as slaves, bringing life into this world. And, you know, we just decided that we were going to live. You know, we were going to live, we were going to struggle. And we're not going to kill our own hope. We're not going to kill our own life. We're not going to kill our right to live. And so we just decided to be human beings, to be people. In spite of all the people that were trying to squash us down and all the forces that were trying to dehumanize us, we decided to be human.
And again, for those who would like more information about Sister Zada Shakur, by all means, please. Online, there's a lot of information there. In fact, there's actually a page there, you know, that is specifically, not a page, I'm sorry, a website. There's actually a website that is specifically for and about Sister Zada, but it also entails a lot of other information there. So go to, I believe it's SadaShakur.com. I'll check on that again and to make sure that that's what it is, or Sada Speaks. I'll have to look and see what that is. I don't have it in front of me right now, but it's an incredible website, and a lot of our folks tend to post, you know, information there, and certainly there's always updates on our sister. Okay, what we want to do right now is, before we close out, of course, as indicated, we want to give you some information about Ida B. Wells Barnett, who was born on July 16, 1862. And she not only was a journalist and, you know, what one might call civil rights movement kind of person, Ida B. Wells was certainly far beyond that. Some have said they put her in the so-called, during that era, it was called women's suffrage movement, and of course that was the fight for women's rights. But Ida B. Wells was, I mean, she, especially for that time, because she was very clear about who she was fighting for and why. And in terms of the lynchings of black men during that time period, Ida B. Wells was one who was, I mean, incredible. In fact, her work was so renowned, and she's considered to be, if not the first, certainly one of the first that did extensive kinds of research and documenting of lynchings of our people during that time period, and would write about it and so forth and so on. She's just an incredible woman, and we want to also let you know that she's one of our sister saints. You know, the Men Women Movement has developed into a bona fide, authentic, well-rounded movement, and as such have taken on the position of utilizing and implementing self-determination, and as such have now declared that we will have our own holidays, our own saints, if we will. And Mother Moore is one, Queen Mother Moore, that is, as well as Mother Ida B. Wells. They are both two of our sister saints. And this year, for October, when we held our Million Women March Week, we will, of course, do some real kinds of extensive things to make certain that the lives and the contributions of these women are not just known, but we're going to make sure that that information is disseminated to the best of our ability. So I'm going to be telling you more about that very shortly as well. And let's see, before we do, there's one other thing we wanted to close out with. Oh, I know what it was. One of the things, of course, that Mother Ida B. Wells was known for was her writing, you know, as a journalist, as a publisher. And so what we are planning to do is to combine a couple of our projects. And one is the Mumia Abdul-Jamal School of Journalism, which will be an online and a correspondence course. for those who are interested in learning or to fine-tuning their skills in writing, particularly in, activism journalism. And because one thing that we know from an organizing standpoint, we have to be able to articulate and make certain that our information is disseminated as best as possible, as widely as possible, and as thoroughly as possible. And so, again, in the spirit of Mother Ida B. Wells, and also in making certain that we do our part, as Sister Asana just said, making certain that we do something to bring our political prisoners home. So with that said, the MWM movement is certain, has made certain that we keep that work moving forward and making certain that we have some part in being involved in working towards freeing our political prisoners. So, again, we'll be telling you a lot more about that between now and October. And we're going to be starting our membership drive very soon. But before we tell you about that, we want to remind you again, on Thursday, July the 24th, we do the kickoff for Queen Mother Moore. Queen Mother Moore, of course, was not only a Garveyite, was not only, you talk about freedom fighter, okay, for example, 1950s, she was taking petitions to the UN in demand of African reparations in the 1950s. Who else do we know did that? All right, so to talk about Queen Mother Moore and to pay tribute to her is an absolute must. And so, again, next Saturday, our dialogue is going to be, to a great extent, about Queen Mother Moore. Of course, it was the Honorable Marcus Garvey that helped to motivate and stimulate and guide. And so we've made that connection. And so, again, on Thursday, we will be at the UNIA here in Philadelphia, the international headquarters of the UNIA, located at 1609-11. Excuse me, there'll be more. There'll be a panel discussion. Open forum, Sister Pam Africa will be there. We're going to focus on topics that Queen Mother Moore was known for. So we're going to have a dialogue on reparations and what is some of the work we need to do today. We're going to also talk about gentrification because for those who don't know, Queen Mother Moore fought for equal or, shall we say, housing, not just fair housing, equal housing, but she was literally fighting against landlords who were raising rents and so forth for our people. Not only was she involved in that kind of a housing movement, Queen Mother Moore dealt, of course, with political. And, I mean, it's just so many other things that we did not really begin to comprehend until recent years. We're going to try to have Dr. Dolores Blakely on to join us next week, who, of course, was with Queen Mother Moore for, I think, about 30 years. But we just recently learned that, I'm sure you've heard before, there's this saying that they give to, what's his name, President Kennedy, this known quote or famous quote, supposedly, I think something to the effect of, act not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. Well, we just found out that was inspired by Queen Mother Moore, who gave him a petition for a demand for reparations. And his response was that statement. So we're going to get more insight into that. Again, that's something that we just recently ran across, and wow, what can we say? Queen Mother Moore, without a shadow of a doubt, was just what we know and call her, one of our warrior women, one of our African warrior women. And so needless to say, we're going to talk more about her next week. Well, before we close out tonight, we are going to leave out with a few words from Queen Mother Moore, and we want to again invite you all to join us next Saturday when we talk about education, miseducation, the need for homeschooling, and what MWM has begun to put together to bring about a coalition. We're going to have a brother joining us next week as well to give us a report on the conference that took place in Atlanta this past weekend that focused on education, homeschooling. African perspective homeschooling. We're going to tell you more about that. And we're going to also, again, hopefully have the brother that we were talking about tonight who has been fired from the Bethune-Cookman College, our brother Raphael Jackson. We're going to, I believe, have him on as well. All right, we're going to get ready to close out, and with that, we're going to close out with Queen Mother Moore. Again, join us if you're in the Philadelphia area. We'll be at the UNIA on Thursday from 6 o'clock to 9 o'clock, 1609 to 11, Cecil B. Moore Avenue. Open forum, panel discussion. Of course, admission is free. Donations are always appreciated. But we will also have dinners available, which will go to help the building fund of the UNIA, as well as the Men Women Movement Social Determination Campaign. So you can pre-order your dinners, or you can come there and get them. They'll be vegan, vegetarian, and also we're introducing one of our youth or one of our young adults, Chef Fresh, who will have a salmon dish with wild rice. So for those who are total vegans, we have you covered. For those who are vegetarians, we got you covered. But for those who also still like a little good fish, we have salmon. Again, join us, UNIA, Thursday, July 24th, for the kickoff Queen Mother Moore Weekend.
People. You couldn't talk about Africa in those days without expecting the agents to be around you. You had the agents of Belgium, you had the agents of France, you had the agents of England.
The results of breakthrough treatments. Learn more about us now.
Now all those agents were sitting on his board.
Or trying to sabotage his work.
Yes. In the film of black skin.
Okay.
You see? So they sabotaged the ships.
All right.
And then they charged Garvey with fraud because he's selling unworthy ships, you know?
How did the work of Marcus Garvey influence your life?
Well, very much so. Oh, yes, because he taught me about the glories of Africa. I never went to sleep a single since then. Never. I did much study since then of my own.
On the glories of Africa?
Yes.
You have made numerous trips to Africa.
Yes.
I understand that you recently attended the Women's Conference, the International
yes.
Women's Conference.
Yes, yes.
Tell us about that.
Yes, that was very great. It was very widely attended with 8,000 women.
Yeah. During your recent travels to Africa, you went to Ethiopia, I understand.
Yes, I went to Ethiopia.
Did you witness some of the famine?
No, they didn't let us go there. We didn't see anything of the famine. You wouldn't even know they had a famine. They kept that from the people.
I guess that's sometimes like people living in New York never get to see Harlem.
That's right.
To show you the...
That's right, the part they want you to see. That's right.
You have land in upstate, Parksville, I believe it is.
Yes.
It's, you have the Mount Addis Ababa.
Mount Addis Ababa.
Okay. And you doing work on that mountain?
Well, we want to build... There, College of African Studies, we were to build a monument to the 100 million Africans who perished in the slave trade and for those who died since, all the people who died in the struggle. 100 million died in the slave trade, yes.
So that's our Holocaust.
Yes, that's our Holocaust. Holocaust.
All right, this institution that you're going to build, the purpose of it will be to educate black people?
Yes.
Again, that was Queen Mother Moore, and next week we will bring you more of that interview as well as some other insight. We're going to make sure that we continue the work of our Queen Mother, and so we're going to show you some of the plans that we have and are preparing for to make certain that we bring forward some of the work that she has laid out for us to do, including the continuation of fighting for and obtaining reparations, restitution, and even retribution. Until next time, we're going to leave you at the time to greet you in the spirit of Maat and Hotep. But remember, there can be no real till there's truly Maat, meaning justice. No justice, no peace. No justice, no peace. We will have peace, but not until we have justice. Until next week, from Moja to the Shinda, together we shall win.
Oh, shall I take it on the broken? Oh, shall I take it on the broken?